Okay, now we go on discussing the practical issues, and we discuss how to compute the pair correlation function. The pair correlation function is an important quantity in any system because it gives you an idea of what how particles organize inside the system. So let's define the pair distribution function G2 of R as the average value of the delta function of capital R minus Ri minus Rj, and everything is then multiplied by the volume to get something which is a-dimensional. Note that in the derivation we are always considering particles 1 and 2, but of course there is nothing special about particles 1 and 2, and so you can consider particle I and particle j. So essentially we are taking two particles, one in position Ri and the other in position Rj, and we get an average when 0 or infinite, depending if the vector R is equal to the difference in vectors. So in the definition, notice that we are using the three-dimensional delta functions, and both R and Ri and Rj are vectors. So as we said, the definition doesn't depend on the pair of particles we consider, so we can just average over all pairs of particles. So we sum over I less than j, this is a sum over all pairs of particles, and remember that the number of pairs is nn minus 1 divided by 2. So up to now everything is exact, and now we go to the method that we use. So imagine that we integrate g2 of r over a shell of width epsilon, a spherical shell. So imagine we are taking a sphere around zero, so we take a spherical shell of width epsilon. So we are integrating inside the difference of two spheres, one of radius r and the other is of radius r plus epsilon. So we are considering a spherical shell, so we integrate over the spherical shell. And so what is the meaning of this integral? Well, if Ri minus Rj is inside, is the vector, Ri minus Rj is inside the shell, the delta function gives 1. If Ri minus Rj is outside the shell, the delta function gives 0. So whenever a pair of particles is such that their distance, well, really, that Ri minus Rj is a vector inside the shell, so their distance is included between r and r plus epsilon, we get 1. While if their distance is not included in the shell, we get 0. So the integral gives you the number of pairs of particles such that Ri minus Rj is in the interval capital R plus epsilon. So imagine the role of the delta function. If the difference, the vector difference Ri minus Rj is inside the shell, we get 1. If Ri minus Rj is outside the shell, we get 0. So we are effectively counting the number of particles that are inside the shell, and the particles that are inside the shell are those for which the distance is included is between capital R and capital R plus epsilon. So this number, we call it capital N, and this is a function of R and epsilon. So what we have obtained is that the integral over the shell of the pair distribution function is 2V times the average value of this capital N R epsilon divided by NN minus 1. Now the idea is to take epsilon small, very small, so that the G2 of R is essentially constant in the shell. So if it is constant, we can take out of the integral, and the integral is simply the G2 of R multiplied by the volume of the shell that we call V epsilon of R. the epsilon of r, of course, we know how to compute it because it's a spherical shell. So being a spherical shell is just the difference between the volume of the big sphere outside minus the volume of the small sphere, which is inside. So this is V of epsilon, something that is completely known. So we end up with an approximate expression. Now this is an approximate expression for G2 of r, which becomes increasingly precise as epsilon goes to zero. So we have V divided by V epsilon of r times 2 divided n minus 1, and then we have the average value of the number of particles included in the spherical shell. So how does it work in practice? In practice, we do the following. We choose as epsilon, which is a value for epsilon, which should be small, but I will discuss later what small means. Then we compute an histogram for capital N as a function of r and epsilon, which means the following. We compute capital M, which is the size of the box divided by epsilon, and we create a vector with m elements, and we set h equals 0 at the beginning. So the vector is 0, all elements of the vector are 0 at the beginning. Then we average over all iterations and all pairs of particles, which means we do the following. For each pair of particles I and j, we compute r hat ij. What is r hat ij? Is the distance between particle I and particle j using the minimum image convention, the one that we discussed in the case of the boundary conditions, of the periodic boundary conditions. So we compute the distance, but taking into account the minimum image convention. Then we take the integer part of r hat divided by epsilon, and we obtain a number, and then we compute hn plus plus. So we do that for all pairs of particles, and we repeat the same procedure over all iterations because we have to compute the average value of n r epsilon. So n r epsilon for each configuration is simply consists in the two loops over the pairs of particles, so the loops over I and j, but then we have to compute the average value of n r epsilon, which means that we have also to average over the number of iterations and, of course, divide at the end by the number of iterations. So in this way, we obtain the average value of n r epsilon. And this is defined here at the end. So the n at position n epsilon of epsilon is nothing but our h of n. The main practical problem is, of course, how to choose epsilon. In principle, you would like to choose epsilon as small as possible. But if you choose epsilon too small, of course, there will be a problem of fluctuations, of statistical fluctuations, because if epsilon is very small, the number of points in each bin will be small, and if it is small, it will be subject to lots of fluctuations. So if epsilon is too small, you will be obtaining a graph like the one at the top of page 3. You see something, but the curve will fluctuate a lot. On the other hand, if you use an epsilon which is too large, you will find something as in the second plot. The curve will not be smooth. It will contain a lot of straight pieces which don't make much sense. So the important point is to choose epsilons reasonable, which means not too small, but not even too large. So what is the idea in practice? In practice, remember that if you have computed n r epsilon for epsilon very, very small, you can, of course, compute n r epsilon for epsilon larger than that by simply adding the bins. So the idea is the following. You choose a very small epsilon, and you do the simulation, and you compute your n r epsilon. Then you do the graph. If the graph is too noisy, then you put bins together, for instance, 2 by 2. This corresponds to doubling the value of epsilon. You sum the content of each pair of bins, so you double epsilon, and you redo the graph and see how it looks. If it's still too noisy, then you again sum neighboring bins to obtain something which is which corresponds to epsilon slightly larger. And you keep doing that, and you stop when you see that the graph is reasonably smooth. When you see that you get something which is reasonably smooth, you stop, and that is your best estimate of the pair distribution function. A second thing that you should be aware, that when you will do this graph, you will see something like the graph which is at the bottom of page 3. Something which is reasonable up to half of the box size, and then it will decrease and go to 0 as the distance goes to L. You should remember that since we are using the minimum interaction convention, we are computing the distribution function only up to half of the box size. For distances larger than half of the box size, our method of computing the pair distribution function is incorrect, because remember that the minimum interaction convention only works for distances which are less than half of the box size. When it's larger than the box size, we should include also some images in our calculation. So our calculation stops at half of the box size. Everything we get after that makes no sense. It's not correct. So you should not report in your plots the behavior of the G2 of R for R larger than L over 2.